Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our show this week, part two from last week, Early Ice with Jason Mitchell. This show, just a continuation there. Last week, I think we wrapped up some fall fishing stuff and kind of started on some concepts and just all the things about early ice that are rattling around in Jason Mitchell's head, as much as I can dig into. Let us know what you like or don't like after the show. Any details that you want us to go, you know, harder into, but you know, trying to incorporate some of these shows with a little bit longer conversation. Sitting down with Jason here for this show, hour and a half, close to 2 hours, splitting it into two shows, so you know we can maybe attack some more topics that you know, otherwise in our earlier format or our typical format, where a little bit shorter show, we might not be able to dig into everything all the time or go as deep as we would like to sometimes. So let us know if you kind of enjoy this series, part one, part two, kind of a show. I know it was a lot of fun to sit down and talk to Jason. It's not very often that he has that kind of time. So, you know, super appreciate Jason's time on this. But yeah, let us know if you enjoyed kind of how we put this show together, if there's anything you'd like to change, because it might be definitely something we see more of in the future, if possible, with our guests. So anyways, yeah, this show, we're talking Early Ice Part 2 with Jason Mitchell on the JMO Podcast. And don't forget, we've got some JMO Podcast merch. Head over to jasonmitchelloutdoors.com, hit the apparel tab, and you'll find all the merch there. We're heading into holiday season. You got a friend, you got a cousin, you got a dad, you got a family member that enjoys Jason Mitchell Outdoors. Make sure ahead of this holiday season, make them super happy. Get them a hat, get them a shirt, get them the whole deal. Take a look over there, jasonmitchell.com. Hit the apparel tab, you'll see what we got there. Now let's get into this early ice conversation with Jason Mitchell. This is part two. I definitely want to spread the love around in this conversation a little bit and talk about any early ice bites maybe that you've had in the past, or any memories, or just anything that you can, that you want to speak to and cover, you know, besides say just Devil's Lake or whatever. Like, is there anything kind of fun and interesting that you look forward to every year? I mean, I know, like you say, like, you know, some of that, like, you know, talking about that Lake of the Woods or, you know, Red Lake, you know, some of those, you know, any of those very like kind of classic early ice opportunities that everybody looks forward to. I mean, is there anything on that that you want to cover or speak to that's maybe kind of interesting? Anything that you've been hearing in the industry or anything like that?
You know, it's hard to see. I mean, Red Lake's kind of a popular go-to early ice spot just because, you know, they get ice early. You know, there's pretty good walleye population usually on Red Lake. I mean, it's good right away, and then by the time you get first of the year, you know, light slows way down, so it's kind of a deal. It's kind of a rush to get up there in December. I don't know how the bite's going to be this year. I do think the walleye numbers are down from, you know, just from things that I've heard, so I don't know if it'll be good as some past years, but I'm still guessing it's going to be probably good enough. You know, it does get a lot of attention. You know, there'll be a lot of people out there right away, but you know, it's a very popular first ice destination, if you will. But you know, a lot of stuff is just right down the road. You know, that's probably why we like to film on small lakes, is that, you know, not everybody can drive up to Red Lake or Devil's Lake or Lake of the Woods every weekend, and that's fine. I mean, those are destination trips for a lot of people where, you know, if you're lucky and you can fish those lakes all the time, that's great. You know, there's nothing better than, you know, living in close proximity to a phenomenal fishery, you know, but not everybody has that, you know, but you can still a lot of times find some pretty good fishing right down the road. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, under the radar, unassuming lakes that are small that at some point, you know, can provide some pretty quality fishing. You know, whether it's, you know, you live in Fergus Falls and there's some great crappie lakes you can get out on early ice, or, you know, eastern South Dakota, southern North Dakota. I mean, there was a time where if you were, say, living in the Wishing, North Dakota, where, you know, like my age, 46 years old, when I was a kid, you know, all those lakes were dry. So if you were a kid that loved to fish, you might have to go all the way to the Missouri River, all the way to Lake Sakakawea, you know, to really get your, you know, your teeth into some what you consider really quality fishing. Now we're pretty lucky, you know, I mean, there's some great fishing for a lot of people close to home. You know, that's one of the great things about all these small lakes that have popped up, is that, you know, you don't have to drive all the way to Devil's Lake, you don't have to drive all the way to Lake Sakakawea. to experience straight fishing. So I would guess that for a lot of people, there's a really, really good fishing lake, you know, within 40 miles of where you live, you know, and I think that's pretty cool. You know, it makes it more available, more accessible to more people, you know, so that's one of the reasons that we like to highlight some of the small lake opportunities, because it make people realize, you know, if you don't have to go to a world-renowned fishery that's 100,000 acres or bigger, you know, to experience the fishing, you can, there's great fishing on 2,000 acre lakes. The double-edged sword of that is that, you know, those lakes are good, but they don't always, you know, they don't handle the pressure that a television show can generate. And so that's why, you know, what we do, you know, we won't name the specific lake. You know, we'll talk about the area, because usually in that area, there's multiple lakes. You look at Otter Tail County, Minnesota, you look at Day County, South Dakota. You know, there's, you know, 50 lakes that'll fit that exact same profile and description and have quality fishing opportunities of that particular small lake that we're on. So we'll just highlight the region, but we won't say the exact lake. Just let people just, you know, find their own bites and let people know those bites exist. But then, you know, you don't have everybody fishing on the same spot after you hear a show, you know. But, you know, but that is a cool thing about the fishing that we have in the upper Midwest, is that there's a lot, even southern Minnesota. Now, you look at a map and you think, oh, the fishing's in northern Minnesota. You know what? There's some tremendous fishing in southern Minnesota. There's some tremendous fishing in Northern Iowa, you know, and Nebraska, you know, and places where you look at a map and think, well, there's not a lot of water, but boy, the water that's there can sometimes really surprise you, you know. So there's a lot of good fishing around this part of the world.
You know, you're kind of touching on a topic right there that I wanted to sort of dig into. That's just maybe sort of like your industry perspective. I mean, you get the unique opportunity to travel around and have conversations with all kinds of industry people in different facets of the fishing industry and ice fishing. You know, in this COVID era where there's just a sort of an increase in participation or at least license sales, if you will, you know, ice fishing for a lot of people is the new opportunity because they don't have a boat or whatever it is, you know, and ice fishing can just be an appeal for people in early ice, you know, when the weather is kind of nice and the fishing is pretty good, you know, it is really maybe some people that are either just kind of the resurgence of their participation or whatever it is, that early ice is kind of the, really, it's kind of like the favorite time of year for a lot of people. For you, just talking industry talk here, is there anything interesting in your mind that's happening with, you know, just some of the, you know, the opportunities, early ice, and just how the industry has evolved, the ice fishing industry, you know, or anything retail related? I mean, we talked with Matt Johnson here a few weeks back, and we were talking fall fishing, but we just had to mention that, you know, ice fishing retail is kind of a beast right now because it's a seasonal thing and it's kind of tricky. And, you know, doing what you do, promoting stuff and promoting products, it's, you know, is there kind of an evolution happening right now in the industry that you want to speak on that might be kind of interesting to educate people with?
Well, I think there's just more people ice fishing, you know, and what's cool about it is that we're seeing all kinds of different people. Like, there's more women ice fishing. There's, you know, I mean, I would say that if you were to look back, say 35 years ago, you know, the average ice angler was probably older, and they're probably a white male. Okay, just, you know, just shooting off the cuff. You know, now we're starting to see, you know, all kinds of different people. You look at Minneapolis, you know, the bunk community in Minneapolis, I mean, fanatical ice anglers. I mean, I get people that reach out to us, whether it's at sports shows or whatever. There's young people, old people, male, female, about every kind of job, occupation you could imagine. People that make a lot of money, people that don't make, you know, that are, you know, hardly get by. Young college kids that, you know, probably don't have much of a disposable income. And that's probably the cool thing about ice fishing is it doesn't take a lot to get into, and you can experience some great success. And so especially, you know, getting to early ice, you know, I mean, you can, you'll have a flasher, a sled, something to drill a hole with, a couple of rods, and, you know, you know, less than $1,000 easily, you can get equipped with the gear to go out and catch a lot of fish, you know, and find that satisfaction, that enjoyment from finding fish and catching fish. And that's good for people, you know. And so you can spend a lot of money, you can spend hardly any amount of money. The fish don't really seem to care at the end of the day. It's all about, you know, comfort you know, obviously there's some things like map chips, for example, and, you know, having a good flasher, you know, and being able to drill a hole, you know, there's certain things that will help you, but, you know, you don't have to have a, you know, a $200 custom rod to catch fish. I mean, you can have a, you know, in all honesty, with panfish especially, you'd be better off with a $30 rod. You know, use $10 spool line and change your line every three trips and catch more fish than the person that has a $200 rod that has, you know, $5 line that changes their line once a month. You know, because it's all about the presentation and the line twist and how you can hang that jig, you know. But, you know, it's appealing for a lot of different people, you know. And you know, there was a time, for example, when there was a lot of people that ice fished where they were seasonal workers, where they would work hard in the summertime and they'd be laid off in the wintertime, or their work would slow down in the wintertime. Well, that's when they had their time to fish. And you know, that's still a big component. You know, a lot of people have ice fish a lot. That's kind of their story. But, you know, a lot of people are, you know, there's a lot of professionals in ice fishing. It's just, that's probably what's mind-boggling today, is that it's changed where, you know, it's such a wide gamut of different people. You know, I mean, you can't just say, what does an ice angler look like today? Who was an ice angler? They come in a lot of different sizes, shapes, and stripes today. You know, it's just becoming a lot more broad appeal, I guess. And the reason being is that it's something that anybody can do, anybody can get good at.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I love that. And, you know, I think, you know, there's probably not a lot of people listening to this show that are have only ice fished once in their life or are planning their next trip, but there's probably a lot of people listening that have fished a lot and have the opportunity to mentor people. And for you, when you get questions from, say, you know, whether it's online or, you know, whatever, you come in contact at a sports show historically, when you come in contact with people that are just real novice or new to something, you know, speaking to, you know, that early ice, I mean, what are just some good, like, basic gear tips? Like, you know, if somebody shows up and says, you know, all I got is a pair of boots and Carhartts, and, you know, I've got, an average budget, what are some things, you know, what is kind of the gamut of things that I just got to have, and, you know, how to use them type of thing, you know, and like I say, there might not be a ton of people that listen to this that are going to write this all down, but it might help people become better at mentors, because I think that's a big thing too, is we all got to be better at, you know, mentoring the next generation, because there's just a lot. Anything that you could speak on that way, like, you know, just talking early ice and mentoring somebody that's maybe planning some, you know, real novice.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, some people have a lot of experience, some people don't have any experience. And, you know, if you are, you know, kind of under the camp, or you've been there, done that, is, you know, maybe have a little bit of grace and, you know, just show some grace towards people that maybe haven't done it a lot. And what I mean by that is, you know, say somebody goes and they drill a hole right in the middle of a road on Mille Lacs or Lake of the Woods or whatever. I mean, if you fish a lot, you know, at the point, was that a bonehead? Like, what were you thinking? Like, you know, you're going to flood this whole road and you just wreck this road. Now we got to plow a whole new trail. You know, just a boneheaded move, right? And you think, man, you couldn't even pull your shack 15 feet off the side of the road, drill a hole. You got to drill a hole right in the middle of the road. What were you thinking? And the reality is, you know, the person that did that wasn't thinking. They probably hadn't fished enough to even know that it's probably the first time they've ever been to a big lake with Mille Lacs. They probably thought, wow, they even plowed spots where we can fish, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a deal where you kind of have to, you know, realize that, you know, not everybody has that experience, not everybody knows, you know. And so you can either handle it two ways. You can either come uncorked on the person and, you know, yell a bunch of profanities and whatever, you know, and get an altercation or some type of confrontation, which is never fun. Or you just explain to them that, hey, you know, this is why we won't do this, and this is what you need to do next time, so now you know, you know. But, you know, I think just, you know, having a little bit of grace and trying to, you know, as far as mentorship, I think that is important, because we have so many new anglers coming in, you know, and, you know, just showing them what fishing is all about, in the sense that, you know, one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, people want more today. In the sense that I can't tell you how many messages I get each week where, you know, we'll air a show and somebody will want, like, the exact waypoints. You know, I don't do that. I mean, I don't give out, like, waypoints. If somebody says, hey, I'm on Devil's Lake, I'm struggling, can you give me a list of spots. You know, I'll give them a list of spots where I think they can catch some fish, where either I've been fishing or whatever, or spots that I know they could probably go and catch a few fish. But as far as like giving them like my exact waypoint for where I, you know, caught a bunch of fish, man, really, you know, I just don't really feel comfortable with that. I would never ask somebody for that, you know? And like when I was a kid growing up, you know, we didn't have the internet, but, you know, you'd watch fishing on Saturday mornings, whether it was Tony Dean or Al Linder or whoever. I could never imagine calling Al Linder's office. Hey, Al, I just saw that video you guys did on Lake of the Woods, and you know, I want to go up there this winter. Can you give me a waypoint of, you know, right where that spot is? I would just never, you know, I would never, that would cross my mind, you know. So, you know, people are different today where they want more. They want it easier, even though it is so easy today. There's so much information today that, you know, it's never been easier to get good at fishing. It still isn't easy enough, you know. And, you know, be willing to put in the work. But at the same time, when you have a chance to mentor people, you know, just kind of, you know, teach them, you know, how to find fish, you know, how to catch fish, you know. Teach them so that that way they can go and do their own thing where they're not reliant on waypoints, you know. And even, you know, I see people like with, you know, some of the high school fishing and stuff where it's gotten so networky and so waypointy where, you know, it's just, you know, I got these 10 waypoints from so-and-so, and they just go from waypoint to waypoint to waypoint, and then they forget how to fish. You know, they forget how to find fish. They forget about the factors that, okay, what made that waypoint good for somebody to begin with? What are the conditions now, you know? And I think that does a disservice to people where they don't learn how to find fish. They don't learn how to, you know, process of elimination. You're trying different things. You know what? Even though everybody says it should be happening shallow, I've spent 2 days fishing shallow. I'm going to fish deep. Why? Because it's the process of elimination. It ain't happening shallow. I'm going to fish deep. Even though everybody else says shallow, I'm going to do something different, you know, and finding your own fish, you know? And I think that's important. And so teaching people the right way to, you know, to find fish, teaching people how to fish, and teaching people that it's not about just, you know, quest and conquer, where, you know, I got to get my limit of fish. I got to, you know, have a bunch of fish, getting fish laying on the ice and call it a day. I mean, it's, you know, at some point as everybody gets better at fishing, we have more people fishing. You know, I mean, it's got to be about selective harvest too, where, you know, eating fish is fine. I love eating fish, but, you know, how many fish can you eat, you know? And is it my responsibility to feed the entire village with the fish that I catch? Well, I don't think it is. You know, you go catch, if you want to eat fish, go catch your own, you know? And I'm not saying that, you know, don't ever give fish to some elderly neighbor or whatever. No, that's fine. But, you know, it's not your job to, it's not like a, I mean, I remember a time where, you know, that was like a thing for people where, you know, they would brag about how they have a freezer full of fish. And if you need fish, you just come over to my freezer. I'm just handing them out like, you know, like Christmas packages, you know, to everybody in the neighborhood, you know. And I don't think that's the right mentality to have either, you know. You know, take what you need, you know, throw the big fish back, throw the smallest fish back. And, you know, and if everybody does that, then there's enough fish for everybody, you know. But, you know, so I think there is a lot of importance to, you know, having some type of mentorship and having some type of influence on the next generation or these new anglers coming in. So that way they, you know, they learn, you know, the right ways to do things and the right reasons to do things, you know, where, you know, they're out there for the right reasons. Because, you know, fishing is funny. Fishing can do people a lot of good, but it can also bring out the worst in people. You know, you look at fishing a tournament, for example. Fishing a tournament can be a wonderful activity in the sense that you can test what you know. You can see, okay, how do I stack up against other anglers? I mean, if some people, you know, some people are just naturally competitive, that's fine. Maybe they played high school sports at one time and they don't get to play high school sports anymore, but they love that feeling of competition. So they can, when they're 40 or 50 years old, they can fish in a tournament, you know, and fishing a tournament can force you to adapt. It can force you to fish those conditions and just, you know, and there's a barometer to see, you know, how good your fishing was and how good your decision making was and where you stacked up. It can be very healthy. At the same time, if you start cheating in a tournament because you want that recognition so bad that you're willing to cheat, okay, well, then that brings out the absolute worst in a person. You know, what's lower than somebody that cheats in a fishing tournament, you know, where they can go up on stage and collect a check and look everybody in the eye and, you know, in front of everybody except that plaque or that trophy or that check, and do it with a straight face. And you're looking at an empty soul, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's like, You know, and so, you know, so make sure that you build your foundation and that you build the foundation of other anglers so that way they're out there for the right reasons, doing the right things, so that we don't create these monsters. You know, it doesn't matter if it's waterfowl hunting, if it's deer hunting, if it's fishing, whatever. You know, all those activities can bring out the worst of people if things go unchecked and if nobody says, hey, you know, that's not the right way to do this. There's a better way. Here's why. You know, because if you do it the right way, you know, fishing brings out great feelings, you know, feelings of personal accomplishment, satisfaction, perseverance. You know, you not only learn a lot about Mother Nature, but you learn about yourself. You know, and you think, you know what, I did the right thing. You know, I didn't shoot that deer. I could have. Nobody probably would have ever known, but it wasn't right. Maybe it was after shooting light, or maybe it was on the other side of a fence where I couldn't hunt. You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to have that structure in place so that way you can feel good about everything that you do outdoors. Otherwise, it's just for naught, you know.
Yeah, and I think that this that mentorship conversation is really crucial, you know, specifically with this ice fishing. You know, it's really the fastest growing silo or department or, you know, or category of fishing. You know, most people that own boats, they don't just buy a boat to go fishing for the first time, right? I mean, the open water fishing, there's a lot of mentorship with that too. But when you, in comparison, you know, this coming into this early ice season, there's just, like you said, ice fishing is just a motley crew of a community, of a culture, and there's just so much, you know, people that are doing it for the first time or maybe traveling somewhere else for the first time. And you kind of got to, you know, when in Rome, realize what the Romans do, you know, and figure out what the regulations are in a different state, you know, or bag limits or whatever it is. But I think that mentorship conversation is quality when we're talking ice fishing and just the ice fishing community in general. And one thing that you touched on that I'm glad you did, it's a good point to make, is that the average angler, the learning curve now with all the technology that we have is so much steeper. And so, you know, you really got to learn those good quality ethics and morals early, because, you know, you can create a monster real fast if you get, you know, a handful of young people that are just getting good with these electronics and getting good at finding fish. But if they don't have good mentorship or somebody, you know, helping them, looking over their shoulder, letting them know, you know, keeping them in line, you know, you can create a monster real fast. And so, I don't know, I think that those are real quality. That's not hating on anybody or anything. Those are just facts and realities, you know. So I appreciate you commenting on that. You know, I don't know, we're doing real good in this conversation. I think we're covering a lot of good ground. You know, anything, you know, I got a couple more questions, but before I get into that towards the end here, anything to you that's real interesting early ice, or is there any conversations that you've been having, or is there anything that we haven't touched on yet that you think is just kind of good points to make every year early ice, or maybe something new now that, you know, people aren't talking enough about, anything like that?
Well, you know, hey, one thing I'd add, you know, just from a mentorship or perception standpoint, I'll tell you a little story, Taylor. It's probably one of, you know, I look back at my career, it's probably one of my great mistakes, okay? And mistakes, so back in the day on Devil's Lake, you know, we didn't have a perch limit on Devil's Lake in North Dakota. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's years where the fishing was incredible, and there's stories of people coming in, and whether it's from in-state or out-of-state, wherever, you know, they'd fill up a whole pickup bed full of perch. You know, a lot of times there were big fish. And it seemed like, you know, at the time, like it was just unlimited, like stars in the sky. You could never fish a lake as big as Devil's Lake out, right? And it went from that to like a perch limit of 25, okay? And, you know, I remember, you know, we were guiding, and, you know, a lot of people we had, you know, they were coming from Wisconsin and Iowa, Michigan, I mean, you name it, all over the place, you know, coming to Devil's Lake to fish for perch. And then at the time, the North Dakota Game and Fish Department was proposing like a lower limit, okay? And maybe it was 25. I can't remember what the numbers were back then. But the premise was that, well, it's not a biological thing. It's more of a social thing. And, yeah, Devil's Lake, it might not matter. But on other lakes, it would matter. We can't have a limit for Devil's Lake and then a limit for another lake 20 miles down the road. I mean, how would we ever keep track of it? And so I remember the Devil's Lake Chamber of Commerce, you know, they were adamantly against, you know, lowering the limits on the perch, saying, well, there's not a biological reason why, you know, why have this limit? And I even became out smoking on it, thinking, you know, hey, if it's not biological, then, you know, let people come and fish, you know, because I was thinking in my head that, oh my goodness, all these people from Wisconsin and Iowa and whatever won't come to Devil's Lake anymore, you know. And I thought it would really, impact our business. And in hindsight, you know, looking back, you know, whatever, you know, I realized that, boy, what an idiotic way of thinking, because, you know, those people that, you know, if they won't come to your lake and, you know, geez, I can only keep 25 perch and, you know, I can only have 75 perch, you know, to bring home and, you know, and I'm not going to go fish there anymore. They're just going to go and clean out the next lake, the next state, you know, they just go right down the road, you know, and, you know, it's almost like we were grooming the wrong kind of clientele, you know, and, you know, in hindsight, it's like, golly, you know, and some of it was, I was pretty young at the time and I didn't realize that, you know, I had a little bit of, you know, I was writing articles and stuff for Dakota Country and whatever. And I didn't realize that, you know, so I had that way of reaching people, okay, that platform that, you know, people that had an agenda or had some type of, they'd spend a lot of time working you, right? And I was just naive to that, you know? And so, you know, I, you know, publicly put it out there, you know, yeah, you know, limit is, you know, terrible idea, you know, and kind of a thing. And then, you know, a few years go by, I think, man, that's, you know, why, you know, do we really want those type of people? You know, they just want to come and destroy your lake. And then once your lake's destroyed, they go on to the next lake, you know? And so, you know, it's kind of a deal where, you know, I've had to learn some of those lessons too myself. You know, I remember being young at the time and young and dumb or whatever, maybe not as experienced with life, but, you know, now, like, you know, I go to places like Cascade, I don't bring any fish home. You know, I'm not out there to, you know, I mean, I can't possibly fathom judging my trip, basing my trip on, you know, how many coolers of perch I can bring home. I mean, you know, you could take it to any CPA and they're going to tell you it's ridiculous. You know, you've been better off just going to the grocery store and buying the best aged beef that there is. You know, I mean, you just can't, you know, you just can't quantify fishing by how many coolers and poundage of fish you can bring back, you know. And so, you know, as I got older, I just kind of got thicker skin where, you know, I'd be at a sport show or something and, you know, because it's funny, you know, 25 perch, you know, and these aren't 25 7-inch perch. I mean, these are, you know, I mean, you know, and so you'd say, yeah, you know, how did you do this? It's like, well, we got a 5-gallon pail full of four people. That might only be 35, 40 fish with four people. So that might only be 10 fish apiece. That sounds great, right? But if you say, oh, we got about 10 perch apiece, oh, well, I mean, I ain't going all the way out there for 10 perch in a day, you know, while they're 12-inch perch, you know, I mean, you know, the reality is, you know, I mean, it's all perception, you know, but it's kind of a deal where, you know, you have to just kind of realize that, you know, there's more to fishing than, you know, that's not what you're basing your trip on is, you know, how many pounds of fish you can bring home. I mean, it's like, come on. I mean, there's way more to it than that. I go up to Lake Winnipeg and, you know, I don't bring any fish back. I don't, you know, granted, I get to eat fish at home. You know, if I'm hungry for fish, I just keep a few and keep what I need and I don't ever hardly ever freeze fish. And I guess I have that luxury. Not everybody gets to fish a lot where they might want to stockpile a few fish. I get that. That's fine, whatever. But there's got to be way more to fishing than that. You know, it's just, you know, the poundage, the gross tonnage, you know. And so, you know, I think too is, you know, we progressed, you know, as an angling community, you know, people have gotten way better and way smarter, you know, and, you know, it isn't about just filling a freezer, you know, there's got to be way more to it than that.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. Yeah, man, I think that's an excellent story told there because, you know, if you were to have that those same opinions or if the industry was going to try to nail you to the cross on those opinions from years ago, you know, that would be like the equivalent of being canceled. You know, I mean, like people would just try to ride you to the ground. But, you know, ultimately, you know, that's that learning curve and fishing is a humbling thing, both on the ice and off the ice. You know, I mean, we all got to be sportsmen, we all got to be conservationists, or at least conservation-minded a little bit when we're mentoring people, because, yeah, man, it's going to have an impact. I mean, it's proven to have an impact. And but it's, I think your last point is kind of interesting too, and very, very honest, where, you know, people are smart, and I think people are fishing a little bit smarter now. With the learning curve of learning how to fish is steeper. Everybody has, you know, YouTube and podcasts to listen to, TV shows or whatever, and you can still you still can go to a filling station and get a combo for, you know, $26, you know, or whatever. So, you know, the barrier of entry with ice fishing is still relatively low. People can learn those other things too. People can learn conservation too. And so never view somebody as a lost cause, and handling it with grace, to one of your earlier points, I think is very quality as well. But I tell you what, man, I mean, you know, we gotta talk a little longer, have a little bit of a closer. And all I kind of had written down, you know, to kind of move on from that is, still to talk about, you know, some of the good early ice fish patterns. You're looking at getting after some perch. We can kind of stick to that. Do you have any strategy or gear recommendations or any fishing destinations that you recommend? And, you know, and tying in just how you want to fish and what some of the patterns typically are early ice that you really like to just kind of describe and recommend?
Boy, that's a open question. You know, it just depends on what we're doing. I mean, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, as a rule of thumb, I don't think you can go wrong with just covering water and just trying to find fish. I mean, usually at early ice, if you can find them, you know, you don't be afraid to just fish through water just to try to find some life. I mean, you're going to find areas that for whatever reason just isn't happening. You got to get out of those areas as quick as you can, you know. And so a lot of times, you know, we're fishing pretty fast, pretty aggressive, whether you're using a spoon, like a search lure. But, you can't go wrong most of the time just trying to find them, you know. And that means, you know, drilling holes and, you know, whether you're just, it's a lot of times I'll have the same lure tied on all day. If I'm not catching fish, it's not because I'm using the wrong lures. I'm just in the wrong spot. And, usually that mentality serves me well. Obviously there's always exceptions to that, you know, like that dirty water thing I was describing earlier with the dead sticks, you know. But usually, you know, whether it's crappies, bluegills or whatever, fish fast, fish aggressively, and just cover water and look for fish and try to, you know, don't slow down, don't stop until you find some signs of life, you know. You know, you're just trying to eliminate stuff, you know. Maybe anticipate the bluegills to be on a shallow weed line on the outside edge, and maybe the crappies are still over a basin. You know, I mean, you're just trying to put the patterns together, you know, and sometimes those fish will throw you a twist. Maybe they're not on the weeds at all. Maybe they're still out over the bowls and the holes, and they're still in their fall wintering locations, you know, and so, or they're, you know, they're still in their fall locations, you know, and so, you know, you just have to, you know, fish through spots and just kind of get a feel for what's happening, and then try to put those patterns together. And you can't do that if you just get bogged down. And so, you know, I think this is a mistake, and not always is it a mistake, because sometimes it works. But, you know, some people, they'll go out of the lake, they'll drag all their stuff out, they'll drill six or seven holes, and then they'll plop down and sick, you know. And at times you can get lucky and catch fish that way. If you're on a lake full of fish, you're kind of by yourself, that'll work at times. But a lot of times, just a matter of just moving and grooving and just trying to find some life, you know. And don't worry about changing lures, don't worry about any of that stuff. Change holes, you know. And if you're starting to mark fish and they just won't have nothing to do with you, well, then it's time to maybe go more subtle, or, you know, go to a dead stick, or, you know, change it up once you start marking fish. But if you're not marking fish, you know, what I find is that, you know, wrong lure, wrong color, whatever, that ain't gonna change your day. You gotta get on fish first. And so don't get hung up on, you know, changing stuff and doing stuff different until you get on fish. That's when you roll up your sleeves and try to figure them out if they're not biting, you know, but you're marking them and you're pretty sure that they're the fish that you want to catch. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, a lot of times at early ice, you know, whether I'm fishing up on Irvin or Pelican or whatever, they all have the same lure tied on for 2 weeks, you know. I mean, I don't ever take it off, you know, just because if they're not biting, I'm not going to sit there and change lures and hope for, what happened, I don't know. If they're not there, they're not there. I just, you know, I fish different spots. I fish different holes, you know. And so I'm not real big on some magic lure or some, you know, I mean, you took like a rattle spoon or a jigging wrap, Tika minnow style bait, whatever. I mean, those are all good for walleyes, for example. Early ice, fish are usually pretty aggressive as a general thumb. Some of the most more aggressive bites that you're going to find for any species of fish. It's just, you know, find the fish. Don't worry about color and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can fine tune that once you find the fish. But, you know, again, a lot of times I'll have the same chewed up lure. I'm not a big color. I don't, you know, necessarily believe in that type of pixie dust. I just believe in, you know, if you find fish, you can do a lot of things wrong. You can catch them on the wrong lure when you find them. So focus on finding them.
Do you see bite windows to be a major factor on early ice? I mean, is it, I think it's probably generally safe to sort of assume that in the, you know, morning and evening, you want to be on your best spots. You know, talking about majors and minors earlier, you know, you want to put yourself on good spots, especially if you're fishing for big predator fish. But, you know, how do you look at that? Or is the perch bite on devils typically good all day and it's, you know, you just grind them out all day?
It varies. I mean, if you have like really dirty water, like what we sometimes see up on Irvin and Alice, for example, I like to play the major and minor more so than sunrise and sunset. Clearer water, you know, a lot of times it is sunset, sunrise, you know, low light. Sometimes you get low ceiling and clouds and stuff, and those windows will happen throughout the day. But, you know, a lot of times, even if there is, like, say, clear water, you know, use the whole day to find fish, because if you catch a few fish in a spot at, say, 1 p.m, a lot of times at dark, they'll really be there, you know. So I like to use the whole day to look for fish, you know, and it just helps you get narrowed down and in the best spot possible, you know, once you get close to dark, you know. So, I like to use the whole day. I like to fish you the whole day. But at the same time, if you have a couple of key spots that you think are going to be your best, or like say you catch a few fish in a spot, but it's just tough, and then you bounce around, you go 2 or 3 more other spots, you don't ever mark a fish, you know, go back to that first spot and, you know, put in a little bit more time and try to wait out one of those windows where, you know, a lot of times, you know, that'll pay off.
In the fall, we talk a lot about transitioning fish. You know, it's a transition time of year. They're moving from point A to point B. Sometimes that can be good for you. Sometimes that makes for tough days. Early ice, you typically see the patterns kind of shape up. Like you say, are the fish moving quite a bit? Or are you seeing more of the fish patterns generally, like on devils, you know, the perch and walleyes? You know, are those fish kind of pretty much in those areas? How do you see that over the course of a day, you know, or over the course of hour by hour, how much fish movement do you really see?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think we're starting to overthink it now. You know, I mean, in the fall and in the spring is when you see massive movements, you know, but they're probably the biggest moves, you know, and the most moves, but here are the most transitions happening. You know, early ice, a lot of times those fish are set up doing a certain thing, but not always. I mean, sometimes, you know, for example, if you have a really hard freeze and, you know, and you've got, you know, just different things happening where, you know, the ice builds up quick and stuff. I mean, you'll see stuff, you know, accelerated, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put too much thought into that. I mean, you're almost better off just, you know, sometimes not thinking so hard and just going out and fishing, you know, and just trying to react to whatever you see that day. And, if they're not here, okay, I'm going to go over there and try. If they're not there, I'm going to go over and try this. You know, and you keep trying things until you run out of time. You know, that's all it is. I mean, other than that, I mean, you can speculate and think all you want, but I don't know if it does any good.
That's the message, man. I appreciate you having all this time, and I'll let you back to it.
Okay, thanks, Taylor.
Perfect, man. Good luck tonight.
Thanks.
Later. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for following along on this this week's show, talking to Jason here, part two of a long conversation. And I'm just really reaching out here at the end, just a call for some feedback. I mean, having the opportunity can be sometimes rare to talk to somebody, you know, for this long. You know, these guys are busy all the time, you know, whether it's having a day job and just trying to find time for some of these conversations. And a lot of times when I am scheduling these interviews, it kind of cutting into some of these guys' fishing time. So it can be kind of tricky. lucky to sit down for this long, having the opportunity to talk to Jason for close to 2 hours was really just a real treat, to have the opportunity to just figure out what's going on in his head when it comes to this time of year, putting fall to bed and looking towards the next season of early ice, and getting to talk about some topics that typically we don't touch on a whole lot. We just don't have the time, in our more standard format, less than an hour, to talk about things like mentorship, really important topics, and digging into, some of the evolving industry in the retail side of things, and just some of how the industry is evolving, all the while still trying to find time, as always, to dig into some of the good on the ice, hands-on fishing information and conversation. So yeah, just really appreciate Jason's time on this, but I'd really just anybody that got to the end of this and has listened to both parts, is this something that you'd like to see a little bit more of? And certainly if we have the opportunity to do more of it with some of our guests, we will keep improving on things and changing things up, and always looking for new ideas. So any feedback would be super appreciated. Have a good week, guys. We'll be back same time next week with more great fishing conversation.